Welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 69, recorded July 5th, 2011.
Yes, happy 5th of July, everyone.
Yeah, we took yesterday off.
Yeah, well, some of you don't celebrate American Independence Day anyway, and that's fine. But for those of you who do, happy 5th of July.
It's Steve the Egg Day.
It is.
It's Steve the Egg Day.
If you get that reference, wow.
Then okay. You're really cool. And if you don't, you're still really cool, but you should go watch all the Dave the Barbarian episodes that you can get your hands on until you find the wondrous Steve the Egg.
Or just Google Steve the Egg. But here we go. We're way off topic.
Let's dive
into the show. Okay. So, David from Texas.
Yes.
We had to sort of stop and say to be continued last week about some of his comments, because he had a lot of great ones. One thing that he mentioned is that he uses bark in his aquaria.
As a substrate?
No, as caves.
Oh, like big pieces sheet of bark. Not like tan bark that's like on a playground.
Right, not like tan bark on a playground. But he takes sheets of bark.
Does he peel it off the tree himself?
From a dead tree.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And because it's already curved, it makes a great cave. Mm-hmm. And it looks nice. So that sounds like a great idea. And he said he would...
a little path through the middle.
Yes, exactly. He would show us some pictures of that sometime. So we'd like to see that. It seems like a nice way to make a good cave for a placo or, you know, many other kinds of fish that would hide. Of course, there are different types of bark, and you can't just peel it off any tree.
I was just going to say, what kinds of trees do you need to be sure to avoid?
Well, toxic trees, and there are quite a few of those. So I would, you know, do a little research on that. But
does it depend on what critter you're putting it in there,
also,
about which one is toxic?
Well, let's give
an example. If it's a toxic tree, it's toxic for everything, or if it's just toxic to one kind of thing? Or
well, I don't have the email here I should check, but I think David uses oak as one of the examples that he mentioned. And oak is great. The thing is, it will release tannic acids into your aquarium.
Which kind of colors the water a little bit?
It's similar to what peat does to the water. So if you're looking to soften your water and you don't mind it getting a little bit ambery first, you can put some oak in, and that'll leach those tannic acids into the water.
Now,
you
can also South American kind of Amazon tanks that they like to do that with? Because that's the natural water conditions? Or
right.
Am I remembering that wrong?
No, you're remembering that right, and there are other biotopes that are like that as well, but that's a big one. So that's a great example of a biotope where that would fit in. You still, of course, have to monitor the water conditions and make sure it's not getting too acidic and so on. Mm-hmm. But it's one thing you can do. You can also take a piece of bark like that and soak it and rinse it several times in a different container until the tannic acids have reduced somewhat, and then put it into your aquarium.
Kind of leach it out a little bit first.
Right, exactly. So that's cool. I hope he is able to send us some pictures soon, and we can check some of that out, because it sounds like that could look really cool if done in a nice way. Another point that David brings up, he wants to see more shows about live food. So, I wanted to respond.
We should maybe redo some of our very earliest podcasts.
See, some of our really old ones that are ancient and have different music even, at least the first one I think has different music. We hope we have, improved our technique somewhat since then. So, yeah, that might be a good idea. But these are some of the ones that we've done so far. Okay, and you can go back on our website and get these. You can't get them on iTunes, but if you go back to AquariumMax and click on podcasts on the bar up at the top, and then keep going back
just
further
to the older
back ones,
podcasts,
to the previous ones, you can see that we've done one on microworms and Walter worms, which also applies to banana worms, even though we didn't mention them in the podcast.
But you do them pretty much the same way.
You can culture them the same way. Vinegar eels, grindle worms, fruit flies, daphnia, red worms, and amphipods or scuds. Have we done any other live foods? I think those are the only ones we've done.
It's been a while, so I don't honestly remember.
I think that's it. So if you haven't listened to any of those and you want to know more about live foods, I would check those to start out with. But if you're interested in doing something else, let us know. Tell us something specific you'd like us to do it on. Or if you say, well, you know, those old ones are just so bad, we need to do them again.
They're too painful to listen to.
Then we can do that too. And, you know, there are other types of live foods that we've used, but I can't think of any at the moment, besides darrow worms. Of course, we should do a show on darrow worms sometimes.
We haven't done that yet, that's true.
We've mentioned them, but we haven't mentioned how to culture them. By the way, we did send David some grindle worms and a darrow worm culture. starter culture recently, and he said that they arrived and they're doing well, and he expects to have well-established colonies of them soon. So that's good to know. We used some Mylar bubble wrap to help preserve them in the heat, and that seemed to work well, as it usually does when we send it using that. So glad to know that worked out. Now let's move on to our next item.
Oh, yes. Well, we had talked about the possible financial difficulty of interviewing people out of the country, and so several people all suggested that we use something like Skype for international calls.
David was one of them, and so did Mike and Stuart. Right. And we do have an account with Skype now, and I'm not a great expert at it. We used to have an account a few years ago, and then I kind of forgot about it.
I'm sure it's changed since then.
And I'm sure it's changed since then, but we got a new account. So if you are an international listener or a U.S. listener who has to pay for long distance and you'd like to talk to us for an extended period on the phone, then let's set something up. So email us at info@aquaramax.com. Now, this is if you would like us to do an interview about something you're doing with your aquarium, or if you want to ask us some involved questions about some particular aspect of the aquarium, hopefully something we know about, that would help. Then
he's too modest.
We'll set that up. Now, if you're in the U.S. and you pay for long distance, of course, we can also work it out so that we call you, and that shouldn't cost you anything, hopefully. But if you're an international listener, let's try the Skype thing. Let's get it set up.
I think it would be great to get some interviews with some of our international listeners.
Me too.
It would be awesome.
And any of our listeners. We love it.
Well, yes. Yes. But I did not mean to slight our domestic listeners.
No, I knew you were being inclusive. I was just making extra sure that everybody knew. So
just
it's okay.
In case I wasn't being inclusive.
No, you're fine.
You're funny.
Okay, so let's go to our next thing then.
Oh, from Andreka. Yes. Hello, Andreka. Okay, I'm just going to read her email here. Says, our tanks have stabilized so far. The ammonia is showing a little still. Not at 0.225, the next color bar, yet not exactly like the 0.0, so just a little bit above.
Okay, and then that's a good thing to know. And the good news for that is that lower ammonia readings are indeed better things. It's good that they're going down. The bad news, unfortunately, is that if anything's showing up on your chart at all, anything above zero, there's something that's still wonky, shall we say, in your aquarium.
That's a great word.
So we need to determine what that is. Even that much ammonia, I mean, it's close to zero, and that's great that it's going down, but if it's readable at all, there's something going on, or it's possible there's something wrong with your test kit. Some test kits aren't the most reliable, especially after a period of time. And then there is, of course, the fact that if you're using certain types of ammonia-removing products, that you'll still get a false reading for toxic ammonia when, in fact, the ammonia has been detoxified. So
it's been, like, bonded to something else.
Right.
So now, excuse me, is there a specific brand of test kits that you like better? They stay, I don't know, what do you call it, fresh longer? Or does it just, it's just over time they just don't work so well?
Well, it's
you
partly...
You just have to keep replacing them?
I would have two things to say about that. One is...
You would have two things
well,
to say
I still
about
do.
It.
I still do. I will say that the test kits that are strips are usually not that accurate.
Okay.
In general. That's the general feeling. And that you tend to get what you pay for. So if you get a really expensive, fancy kit, it's probably going to give you a better reading. But, you know, not necessarily. I don't know. It's hard to say. It really is. But I would say even if you've got a teeny bit of ammonia there and it's not a false reading, just let's assume it's not a false reading for now, that you're definitely getting, your immune systems or your fish are definitely being suppressed by that. Even tiny amount of ammonia is enough to really weigh down on your fish. So I want to ask a little bit more. I know I've asked you some of this already, but about what kind of filter you have and what the gallon per hour it is, and what sort of biomedia does it include, like biological filtration as opposed to chemical and mechanical filtration, and how much substrate you have, what kind of substrate you have, and if you are using ammonia toxicity reducing substances like Prime or Amquel or something like that. And those really aren't permanent fixes. They're just kind of stopgap measures, but they can help in the meantime. I'm just thinking you may need to increase...
They're not something that you have to just keep using medicinally
forever.
Every day.
Right, right. But the nice thing is they will trap ammonia in a way that detoxifies it for the fish, but it's still accessible to the bacteria, so you're not interfering with the cycle.
That's nice.
Some other ways of reducing ammonia can interfere with the cycle, and that sort of starts you all over from the beginning and causes problems. So hopefully we can figure out what's going on. I'm just thinking you might need to increase your biofiltration a little bit if this is still going on, because your tank's been set up for a while, and if any ammonia is being read, there's something that's not quite right. So let's see if we can determine what that is. One thing that we had in conversations with Andreka on Facebook, Brian also mentioned that a hospital or a quarantine tank would be nice, because that can help. You know, you can treat fish in one tank without regard to sensitivities of other fish in the tank or other inverts in the tank, and that's a great point. Hospital and or quarantine tanks are great things to have. And then one thing Andreka mentioned is that that's in a perfect world, and it's true. If you can, definitely have a hospital / quarantine tank. It's a great thing.
If you've got space and the money to buy another tank.
And then we do recognize that there are times and places where you just can't have one. And, you know, it's a luxury for you that just you can't afford it in terms of time or space or money or whatever it is. So hopefully in the future it's something you can look forward to if you don't have one. But if you don't have one, you just got to do your best without it. Okay, so.
The next thing that we're going to talk about, Andreka asked us for a list of our top favorite websites and podcasts and or magazines for aquarists.
Okay, so where do you think we should start?
Well, there aren't that many magazines.
So does that mean you want to start with magazines?
Let's start with magazines.
Okay. Well, the ones that I have some acquaintance with, of course, Aquarium Fish International, because I write the occasional article for them. They also have now incorporated Freshwater and Marine Aquarium, which was a magazine for more advanced aquarists that they used to publish separately, but now they're combined them into the same magazine. So Aquarium Fish International, which is mainly intended for beginning and intermediate aquarists, and now Freshwater Marine Aquarium for advanced, it's all in the same magazine.
So the magazine is intended for everybody.
Yes, all aquarists. So there's that one. And I can't say that's not kind of a little plug, because I guess it is, because I do.
That's okay, because if they like your podcast, they'll like your articles.
They might. Let's be optimistic about that. Okay, another magazine.
Well, hey, I like your podcast.
Oh, thank you. That's because you're a major contributor and co-host of the podcast.
Yeah, I comment every week, huh?
Yep, you do. It's great, because you're the co-host. That's more than a contributor. Okay. Then the Tropical Fish Hobbyist is another big magazine out there. I haven't ever written anything for them, but I have read the magazine.
No, did you say that one was out of the UK?
No, that's Practical Fish Keeping.
Oh, okay.
But that's a good magazine, too. Practical Fish Keeping. They have a website, practicalfishkeeping.co.uk. You can check that out. They have an actual magazine, too, but if you subscribe to the magazine, you can get access to more of the articles, but if you don't subscribe, they still have a lot of cool stuff on the website that you can access. So I would say that's probably worth a look. Then, let us go on to something different. Shall we go on to
websites?
Yes. How about one that I think is nice because it has extensive searchable FAQ, or FAQ, frequently asked questions section, that's very easily searchable and quite well organized. And then you can also, if you can't find an answer to your question there, you can also write in. And if you follow the rules, and there are certain rules you need to follow to be able to post successfully, that you can get an answer very quickly, because they have a team of volunteers that staff the thing all the time. There's someone on there almost all the time.
So it's a little bit more than normal frequently asked questions. It's like fish email hotline.
Yeah.
And you can go search through everybody else's questions.
Exactly.
That's cool.
Hey, let's have a break.
Okay.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Okay, so wetwebmedia.com is a great place. I've actually asked a few questions myself. I remember once in Hawaii I had some problems with our neon tetras and wrote in and asked about what to do there, and they provided some good insights and I was able to solve the problem. So there you go. Now, let's talk about another one. Now, I should make a disclaimer that these are not necessarily the top 10, they're just some of the many, because I would have a hard time narrowing it down, but another one that I like...
It's some to start with.
Yeah, just a few to start with. Another one I like is The Crib, K-R-I-B.com, which is named after a fish, Cribensis, a cichlid, small cichlid out of Western Africa that used to be called... its scientific species name was Cribensis. It no longer is, but the name has stuck.
No.
Its common name is crib.
Why did they change the scientific name and the scientific name became the common name? That's kind of funny.
It is kind of funny, but there are many reasons to change scientific names, and we'd be opening a taxonomic can of...
Fish of a different color?
Yeah. Taxonomic can of worms or something. I don't know. But we probably shouldn't get into that too much today, although that's a great question. But basically, this website is a lot about plants, and it's kind of done as email archives, but it's by a lot of very experienced people who are into plants, and they can give you a lot of good answers. But not just about plants. There are lots of things about live foods and other aquarium-related topics, too. So that's a fun one. It started a long time ago when they were mostly email posts, when... You know, email was how it worked.
Kind of like bulletin board type
posts. Yeah, started that long ago. And so there's a lot of good info there, though.
It's been around for a long time.
Been around for a while, right. Some other ones, you can check out aquabotanic, botanic.com. That is not just about aquarium plants. It used to be a site, someone who sold them, and that was the business, sold aquarium plants. And now it's more general for...
Just information.
Informational, kind of a blog type format. And I actually heard about that on Petfish Talk. So there you go. And I checked it out and it looks pretty good. Aquabid.com is a great resource if you're looking for products, if you're looking for fish, you're looking for plants, you're looking for invertebrates, or just
live food.
Aquarium supplies, including live food. Great place to go to find all kinds of things. And incidentally, many of the listings have links to websites that
which
are made by people.
You can lead you to other fun places.
Right. You can, if you're looking up bidders, for example, on Aquabid, you can often be led to sites that will show you lots of interesting things about
basically, bidders. If they've never been there, just think of it as eBay for aquariums.
Yes, eBay for anything aquaria-related, so it's good. Although it doesn't have any listing fees.
Yes, in that way, it's much better than eBay.
Yeah, so there you go. Another one, if you, for example, find a fish in a pet store and it's called something, it has this
it's called George.
Common name that you've never heard before and you don't recognize the fish.
Maybe it's called
fish.
Ringo.
Maybe it is, I don't know. Is that a
some
Beatles
of those,
reference?
I would never make a Beatles reference. Okay. What are you talking about?
I don't even know. But if you have if you have fish and you have a scientific name but no common name, or vice versa, for example, you can go to Fishbase and type in either one, which is a great feature, and the fish will pop up if the scientific name is valid or maybe not even valid, it's just maybe it's
close
an old
enough
one or something. Or if it's a common name that is actually used fairly commonly, some pet stores are guilty of making up common names because they think, oh, nobody's been buying this, let's name it something else. And so they do, and somebody buys it. So that's a problem. In those cases, it might not help. But if it's a fairly frequently used common name, you can usually find it there, and your fish will pop up with the scientific name, which will help you find out more information about it. It also will give statistics about where the fish was originally collected, how big the fish grows in captive conditions and in the wild and things like that. So
it could potentially be useful if you're thinking of getting a particular kind of fish as a tank mate for something else and you want to know more about it?
Right. Like, you go to the pet store and you find this fish called a purple goby. And you say, I don't know what a purple goby is. I better go find out more about it. You go to Fish Base and you look it up and it says, purple goby. This fish is also known as a sleeper goby and it grows to be this big. And you think, oh, I was thinking of getting it, but I don't think it's going to fit in my tank.
How big do they get? Now I'm curious.
Oh, I don't remember.
They get as big as purple.
They get as big as purple? Okay.
Okay, sorry.
Well, that would be one possible application, so thank you for bringing that up. Okay, let's talk about podcasts.
Yay, podcasts!
We're one.
Ta-da!
You can always check us out.
Just in case you've never heard
of us. In case you've never heard of us. But there are many others out there. Actually, there are not as many as I wish there were. Here are a couple. Pet Fish Talk is a big one. This one's been around for a long time. A wide variety of hobbyists call in, and although the show in some ways is mostly for beginning aquarists, there are quite a few advanced aquarists who call in, and I get some good info and ideas from it when I listen, so I tend to listen quite a lot. Some others that I haven't listened to as much but are highly recommended by a lot of people, and I would like to listen more if I had more time. I need to see if I can do that sometime. Blue Zoo Radio, that's a big one that is well received by many. So I would say if you don't already listen to that, and many of our listeners do, give that a try. And one that's fairly new out there, Aquarium Mania.
And there's just one M to join the word, just not Aquarium Mania, it's Aquarium Mania.
Yeah, and that's put together by an ichthyologist, so.
Oh, neat.
I've listened to a couple of episodes so far. There are some other ones out there, but there's one called the Planted Aquarium Podcast, and one of our listeners put that together, and I think they're taking kind of a hiatus. I'm trying to remember who did that, but taking a hiatus now, but they've got some great starting episodes, and hopefully they'll be back on that pretty soon. Planted Aquarium Podcast. So they had a great start, so I hope they keep going. There are others. There's even one that I used to listen to in Italian, which they stopped doing.
I guess it's probably not an Italian aquarium.
Yeah, probably not very useful for most of you, but there's a good start. So let's hope that is a helpful way to get you started on that. Now, we do have a few other things that we'd like to mention. One thing is we had an exchange on Facebook with Terry. Terry's a new contributor.
Welcome, Terry.
Yeah, we're glad that Terry is on board with us. Had some questions about a 55-gallon tank with some Placos. Was having trouble with Placos. Now, I got to tell you, when I first started out with Placos years and years ago, when I was about, 13 or so, my first two or three Placos died within a few days. I was very perplexed, and I brought them back to the pet store clerk and said, look at this, these Placos are dying, what's going on? And he said, this is really strange, Placos are hardy. But just know, Terry, that you're not alone. Things like that happen sometimes. And we think we may have narrowed this down by talking to Terry on Facebook. We think it may be an issue where more water changes are needed. So Terry has already stepped up her water changes and did one, did one today, it looks like. So hopefully that helps. And Terry also wondered when the podcasts were. Well, this is a great question, too, because some podcasts are recorded live and streamed live. We currently don't do that. Maybe someday we'll be able to do that, but right now we don't stream them. They are just available on the internet. They usually are released on Wednesdays. So the newest podcasts are released on Wednesdays. However, we usually record them on Mondays. So if you're interested in actually participating in the podcast as a contributor that we actually talk to back and forth, two-way conversation, then just let us know and we'll arrange something, and typically we record on Mondays. And right about 7:30 Mountain Standard Time is when we start those, but we can, that's impossible for you, we can work out a time with enough advance notice, we can work out a different time. So
like
hopefully
today
that helps.
We're doing Tuesday, because yesterday was a holiday.
Right. So we can let you know about that. Okay. So, a few other things. One thing, Stuart sent us a cool link on caring for tropical dart frogs, which is very cool.
Dart frogs are so pretty.
One thing that I love about this, we still haven't checked out the link entirely. We haven't finished checking it out, but we've checked out some things about it. And one thing that we both liked, do you remember what you liked about it?
The richa?
Yeah. The plant that we call richa because of our Italian background, but
what do
probably
people
most
call
people
it?
Call it richa? Something like richia, I don't know, maybe richia. And it's a plant. It's actually closely related to Pellea. It's a liverwort. So it's not...
Richa sounds much better than liverwort.
Yes. Well, liverwort is a big group of plants that
sounds
are...
Sounds like liverwurst.
They're related to mosses, but they're not quite mosses. But they are simple, non-vascular plants. They don't have true roots. And they have root-like structures, but they're just sort of a funky growth that looks kind of like a light green moss. And they look really nice growing immersed in these dart frog tanks. So that's cool. And I look forward to checking that out a bit more. So thank you, Stuart, for sending that along. We have another message here from Carlos. And Carlos says that he wanted to give us an update on his fishy adventures.
His angelfish have spawned again on the filter tube. And he says he noticed his 12-inch Placo chasing them away from the eggs and then eating them. I'm assuming means eating the eggs.
Right.
Okay. And so he had to move him, which he said was not too easy, to the 55-gallon tank with the sunfish, and he's doing better there. And then the angels resumed spawning and are now keeping all the other fish at least 12 inches away from the eggs. So maybe he'll have some baby angelfish.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds promising. One thing that is interesting is that 12-inch Placo, moving one of those things has got to be a big party.
12-inch Placo is a big Placo.
Yeah, even moving a 5-inch bristlenose Placo is not fun. Because doing it with a net is really not very easy. Because they stick these spiked club-like structures, their odontodes, out of the sides of their head and jam them in the net. And then you have to try to get them out of the net, which is not fun. So I don't even move them with a net anymore. I use a bottle trap. It's a lot easier. But trying to... Well, you'd have to have a pretty big bottle trap to catch a 12-inch Placo now, wouldn't you?
It'd be like...
So...
What would you even...
I'm curious what you used, Carlos. It sounds interesting. That could be a story all in of itself.
Yeah.
So, yeah. If you are interested in letting us know exactly process you use to do that, that would be kind of fun. But we are keeping our fingers crossed that your angel's eggs will hatch soon. That sounds really fun. It's been a while since I've had adult angels spawning. I'd like to do that again. That's fun stuff. I used to have a pair of white veil-tail angels when I was a kid that would spawn all the time, but then they would invariably eat the eggs, and it was frustrating. But, all right, now, Carlos did, had another post about this. Recently, we've talked about his CPDs a little bit because he was wondering if his CPDs were spawning, and we said, oh, yeah, they're spawning.
Celestial Pearl Danios.
Yeah, Celestial Pearl Danios. They're probably spawning in the situation you had them in. And he said, yes, he's actually had a couple of fry show up.
Yay!
And he's been taking them out and putting them in another tank. And he said he doesn't really have anywhere else to put the adults, but so he's going to content himself with finding a baby here and there in the aquarium, and that's fine. I mean, that's a good way to do it if you want to just have fun with it that way on a small scale. It's kind of like the small-scale egg layer breeding we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to do that's what I do with my rainbows because I don't really have space to grow a whole lot more than I'm getting. So when I get a couple of fry that show up, I just let them go and grow up and... That's a fun way to do it for right now until I decide I want to boost things up or whatever. So it's a great way to have fun with it as well. And then you sort of feel like you have a personal relationship sort of with each little fish that you pull out of the tank. Yes, I rescued that one from the tank and pulled it from the very jaws of its voracious parents, and it's kind of fun. So good luck with those two. CPDs are beautiful fish as well. And let's see, we have some other comments from everyone else, from other people, not everyone else, but from many other people we'll have to get to next time. Keep it coming. We're loving the fact that so many people are contributing to each show. It makes us happy.
And I think the Facebook's been really nice for everybody to kind of just comment on and be a little fishy community.
Yeah, so thank you all.
Warms our fishy hearts.
We very much appreciate all of your contributions, and we hope that many of you will be wanting to set up an interview pretty soon. That sounds cool. Have a fishy week, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.